Hey there, welcome to Altars Up Witches, a podcast that explores the roles of queer and trans artists and witches at the intersections of ritual, art, and community.
Join Kiki and Ilva every full and new moon for witch tips, a lunation reading, conversations, and guest interviews. Follow us on Instagram at The Living Altar for more information. Edgar Fabian Fias is a non-binary, queer, indigenous, and brown multidisciplinary artist, curator, educator, psychotherapist, and Brujax. They work in photography, video art, sound, sculpture, printed textiles, gifts, performance, social practice, and community organizing, among other emergent genres. In 2012, they developed their energy and healing art practice, Our Sacred Web, where they offer divination, ceremonial, and pedagogical services.
Born in East Los Angeles in 1983, Edgar received dual BAs in psychology and studio art from the University of California, Riverside. In 2013, they received an MA in clinical mental health counseling at Portland State University in Portland, Oregon, with an emphasis on interpersonal neurobiology and somatic psychotherapy. Frias is also a 2022 candidate for an MFA in art practice at the University of California, Berkeley. You can tip Edgar via Venmo at Edgar Frias, E-D-G-A-R-F-R-I-A-S. You could also follow Edgar on social media on Instagram at Edgar Fabian Frias. And you can find all the links to their work in the show notes. All right, we are so excited to have this amazing guest, and we hope that you enjoy our conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ilva, for that amazing introduction. And thank you so much, both of you, for having me on this podcast. So my name is Edgar Fabian Frias, and I am a queer, non-binary, vidarica, indigenous, brown artist, healer, brujekis, energy worker. And I've, you know, also identify as a mutant, and I'm emergent and ever transforming and allowing myself to explore different paths and parts of myself. And, you know, I'm in this moment, you know, in still in transition. I just arrived from Tulsa at the moment of this recording, and I'm here in the Bay Area now. And yeah, and I'm in the graduate program at UC Berkeley in the MFA art practice program. And that's one of the things that I've been kind of really in, steeped in right now. I am preparing for our first year MFA art show that's happening in January. And it's going to be going January and February of this year. And I'm also just kind of reorienting myself and kind of figuring out what my life is going to look like here now being in the Bay Area. I've been in the last, for the last 2 years in the Tulsa Artist Fellowship, you know, being a full-time artist, and I feel like now being back in California, I'm definitely going to be, you know, exploring therapy and working, continuing to work with folks with tarot and with ceremony. Yeah, so I'm, you know, my socials are, I'm at Edgar Fabian Frias. That's also my website, edgarfabianfrias.org. And our OUR Sacred Web, that is my, also my energy praxis, that you can find me also on Instagram as well.
Beautiful. And will you share your, my dog Iris is in our conversation. So if you hear like grunting and snarfling, it's not myself or Kiki. It's Iris.
She wanted to be a part of this. She's like, hello. She's greeting you.
She was so excited. She was like yipping at the door. So I had to open it, and she was just snarfling the phone.
So. That makes me so happy.
Yeah, she really wanted to say hi. I think she did that. I think she's done that every time you and I have had a conversation, Edgar. So that's kind of cute. Will you also tell us your e-payment information so that as folks are listening, they're going to learn so much from this conversation and they're going to get so much out of it. So we always encourage people to like tip our teachers and tip our guests and tip, you know, just tip all of the mutants and queer folks who share wisdom with us. So, as we're listening, go ahead and, Venmo Edgar, if you can share that.
Yeah, I'm on Venmo at Edgar Frias and Cash App and the dollar sign Edgar Frias. And I'm also on PayPal, Feds, that's FEDS01 at gmail.com.
Awesome. Beautiful. And we'll have all that information listed on the episode notes as well. So cool.
Wonderful.
Well, shall we dive into the conversation? Oh, I would love to set some intentions first before we dive in.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, and I would love to just create a container for this conversation as well. So I'm going to begin and then pass it to Ilva. So I'll have all of us close our eyes if that feels good. And for all those listening at home, if you would like to close your eyes, you can just take a moment to arrive in this space to be an active participant of the conversation and also inviting in your sacred magic as well. And I want to just start by just giving gratitude for this opportunity to be in container and be in conversation with Edgar and just bringing in, I want to just surround us in like a beautiful gold colored, almost iridescent rose gold is also coming in. So I want to just actually bring in just a beautiful like celestial energy into the space to surround us and to create the container and the cocoon of this conversation. I also acknowledge that Alters Up, the podcast, is facilitating this conversation on unceded Coast Salish and Duwamish territory. And I also call in, I feel called to call in the power of the witches that came before us and the witches that are to come after us. Our queer ancestors and those who walk with us in this work, and our creative spirits and the benevolent and kind and bright ancestors. And for those listening at home, you can also call your helping spirits. You can call to your spirits who walk with you to also be active participants and listeners in this conversation today.
And I just ask that we arrive as best as we can, as always, to ourselves, to our bodies, to our minds, our memories, our feelings, our emotions, and to our physical existence, our physical iteration in ourselves, our body, and our life. At this time, however we can, to the best of our ability. And we ask that in this state of presence, in this state of arriving, that we remain open and curious to the conversation that wants to unfold between the three of us here. And I'm also really, I'm really obsessed right now with bees. I just feel them in this conversation, and I feel them around us. And so I just want to thank the bees and the honeycombs and that golden honey that surrounds us. And I ask that this conversation be transmitted in such a way where our listeners are able to receive that sweet honeycomb inside of themselves that that they work so hard for.
Thank you so much. I'm feeling those bees and feeling so connected to the earth and to all the divine beings that are in this sacred container, this sacred space with us. And I want to take a moment and also acknowledge that I'm, you know, in this moment in Ohlone territory here in the Bay Area, and that I'm feeling all the sacred ancestors of the land here present with us. And I'm feeling the trees and the crows and the hummingbirds that are still active in this space here, joining us, a part of this sacred container that we're all holding together. And I also want to name that we are connecting with you beyond time and space whenever you're entering into this container. So take a moment and bring in the energies, the beings, the beautiful insects and plants and birds that are surrounding you into this space with us, because you are a part of this container too.
And so it is.
So it is.
Yes, so it is.
So as we're going into this conversation, it's winter, but this episode will likely air at the very earliest days of spring. And so I want to reiterate this time portal magic.
I feel that.
Yeah.
I was like falling in time magic. I was like, whoa.
I feel like we're like talking to our future selves.
I know.
I'd be so curious to see what's happening in the spring.
I know. Maybe our future selves can tell us.
Yeah. Oh, whoa. Dang. Okay, let's get some forecasting in here. Okay?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Wow, we're so excited. It's always a pleasure to spend time with you across the ethers. And thank you for making time for us in this conversation, Edgar, considering also you and your sweetheart and your family just moved. Such a big transition.
You know, I definitely feel like this is divine timing, and I'm so honored to be here and to be connecting with you in, you know, through these ethers, and really trusting in the magic that we're weaving together today.
I would love to start, and I have a question for you about your art making. I know that so much of the art that you make is spelled and woven into your magic. And I'm so curious when that began for you. And I'm curious about your process with that, if you would like to share about how your magic informs your art making.
Wow. Yeah, that's, you know, there's many layers of that question. And I feel like one of the, I think, first things that came up was just seeing myself as a young, you know, queer mutant. Like in my room, writing in my journal and kind of doodling and kind of feeling, you know, almost a little, what's the word? Like just feeling a little like I wasn't supposed to be drawing, because I feel like I got shamed a lot as a young person for my art abilities or disabilities as they were perceived by some people. And so I think art has felt transgressive a lot for me. It's also felt very sacred. And I've had a lot of moments of sacred connection in art spaces or with artworks. And, you know, more recently in connecting with other art witches or witches who traverse, you know, the creative realms, I have felt that sacred spirit energy now in community or, you know, across the ethers, also within creative practice. So yeah, I would say magic has a huge, huge connection with art for me. It's how I entered into the art world was through an altered experience with an art piece when I was 14. So altered spaces and magic really inform my work. And it's also what I also love to teach about. I love to teach about divination for creatives, because, you know, I've really Yeah, I've learned that there's so many artists who use altered states or work with divinatory, you know, magic to weave into their art practice. And a lot of us receive messages about projects from, you know, guides and spirits and from transcestors and ancestors.
It makes me think when I hear about when you said your art abilities and perceived disabilities and how that creates this relationship of transgression with art, that kind of did something to me. And I all of a sudden these like flashes of memories kind of like pop up in my mind, and I'm just like, yeah, I think I have a relationship with what I think that means. Can you talk a little bit more about that? About this, yeah. Like the way that you are an artist and the way that you perceive yourself as an artist, and then like the way that others have perceived and maybe even like shamed you because of what they assume. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Could you elaborate a little bit more on that? That feels really like potent, if that's not too tender.
Yeah, no, it's I've definitely gone to a lot of therapy about it. So
let's all take a moment to bless our therapist. Past, present, and future.
Yeah, they're all somewhere in the time space continuum being like, wow, I'm just overcome. Yeah.
And also like bless all of our former partners and like ex friends who also maybe were subject to some of those learnings.
Yeah, there is so much energy there. I think it's yeah, it is something I've worked on a lot. But I, you know, as a young person, one of my earliest memories with art was working on a project, being really excited about it. This was in third grade. And it was actually a map of the United States, I remember. And I like had colored it and, you know, had been really excessive with my coloring, you know. And the teacher literally like called a meeting with my parents because she was concerned about me. And, you know, it made it like a really serious thing. Like I was messy and not coloring right. And so, I think a lot of us hear these kinds of messages. And so that was like one of the first messages I heard of like, I'm not someone who draws or paints, or I'm too messy to be an artist. And then, you know, I think subsequently, there's so many, many, many moments I've had where I've kind of told myself that I'm not something, or that I maybe don't deserve to take up spaces in a certain way, or I'm not like proficient or have enough capacity to do something. And I think that's really informed my work in the sense that, you know, one of my first big projects in my life was, you know, doing a queer music and arts festival in Portland, Oregon. And a big ethos of that festival was like, do something you're not good at, you know? like try out something that you're not proficient in. And I took that on myself as an artist, and I made music and, you know, tried out writing and did things that I really felt like I didn't have permission to do, or like I could take up space in. And that's like really informed, like really in a lot of my work. And I think that's why as an artist, I'm so multidisciplinary. And I also love holding space for people's own creative evolutions, just because I know what that feels like to not feel like your voice matters, or to not feel like you're allowed to work with a certain medium.
Yeah, I feel like imposter syndrome is something Ova and I talk a lot about in our art making and
existence.
How are ways that you have come up against that and transmuted that or transformed that within your own creative practice?
Yeah, I think naming it is a big, I think it's amazing that you both talk about it, because I think it's a huge part of kind of noticing when it comes up. And that was one of my first big steps, was noticing the many times where I felt like I wasn't yeah, like my voice wasn't important enough, or like I felt like, and I think that was even reflected. That was one of the reasons why I started that with my friends, that Queer Music and Arts Festival, was because we all felt rejected by the mainstream art community. And, you know, when the art community doesn't think that you're relevant, then you do internalize that. But I think there are ways to challenge that, right? By saying like, okay, maybe no one is showing my art, but I'm going to make a platform for myself, you know? Okay. And that's been one way of kind of creating your own platform. And then from that, I feel like, you know, there are moments where you start making connections or other folks start to get excited about your work. And, you know, I think also really being supportive of other people and really giving out the energy that I wanted to receive has also created a beautiful, like, flow of energy between myself and others, where I'm surrounded by people who are uplifting me, and I'm also uplifting people constantly as well. And I think that's also really transformed, you know, that feeling of rejection that I felt so much growing up. But yeah, I think imposter syndrome, unfortunately, is, I think, a strategy of the patriarchal system, right? And I think about all the mediocre cis straight white men who, like, don't ever, you know, think about, like, showing a square block of, or whatever, you know, like, I, I joke about certain artists who, like, you know, they paint like a rock, and, you know, painting rocks has its, like, place, but, like, but someone who, like, doesn't even think about bringing something to be seen by the community, I think that's inspired me too, of being like, wow, like, you know, who are the folks who feel imposter syndrome, right? We see it lots of times.
Absolutely. It's us.
Remember that, like, real imposters don't experience imposter syndrome.
Yeah. What would that be like, to, like, live in a world where you experience, like, unearned confidence and unchallenged confidence at doing the least and expecting the most? Like, I'm going to say something that probably is going to upset many people, but that's okay. Like, there's nothing transgressive about straightness. There's nothing transgressive about cis het patriarchy. There's nothing transgressive about this. There's, like, literally, like, I don't understand. Like, anyhow, just to name it.
Yeah, I think it's made me really, really happy when I started the MFA program that there were no cis, straight, white men in the program, in my cohort. And I was I was like, praise God, because I think, you know, that question that you asked, if you want to see that, go to a mainstream art school and you'll see what that does, you know, when people don't have that questioning or don't have that guilt or, you know, the fear of, you know, do I deserve to take up space? Like, it can be really painful to witness someone going through that and being surprised when people don't just exalt them or adore them for what they're showing.
I feel like so much of the art that Kiki and I create comes from a place of, well, for me, it comes from a place of, like, needing to survive, or, like, needing to be witnessed, or needing to, like, more like needing to sit in reflection with another person and to say, am I real? Like, am I real? Is this real? Does that make sense? Yeah. Do you experience that with our work sometimes?
Yeah, because I think that sometimes, you know, something that really kind of stuck out to me when you were talking in the beginning, Edgar, was when you were talking about altered spaces and thinking about when we are creating, we are in an altered space in multiple different ways that, like, I feel like Ilva and I, we go into almost a trance or a altered space with, like, where I feel like Kiki kind of fades into the background and, you know, spirits and ancestors move through me. Then I started thinking about, like, oh, altered space also is containing of an altar within mm-hmm. itself. Yeah. Like, just like the word itself, yeah. I was like, oh, right. wow.
Yeah, yeah, the you manifestation know? Of art is an altar.
Yeah, yeah. So I I understand what that, yes, because I feel like it's like, oh, you kind of like, at least I, yeah, my personal experience has been that parts of my identity fade into the background, but then parts of my identity come forward, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, like, the parts of identity that maybe, well, for me, it's, like, aspects of myself that maybe I am really hesitant to communicate with in an outward
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
Or have experienced violence, whether perceived or actual, usually actual, whenever I do express them. And so, like, that intimacy and that vulnerability and that tenderness, like, that's that, for me, art and identity, that intersection is so vulnerable. And I just can't understand, back to, like, this larger conversation, like, it's so hard for me to understand artists who don't exist within that kind of veil or that liminal space, right? Mm. Where art and identity, or art and existence, or art and salvation, or art and like, you know what I mean? Like, where that's not a question for them. Mm. I just, that's mm-hmm. such an interesting thing for me to,
to know that it exists. Yeah.
I'm like, huh.
Well, I think about that deep.
Anyway, I'm a bit tangential.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I think about that deep void that I felt growing up as, like, you know, a gender expansive queer person who just didn't see myself, or the only times I saw people that resonated or felt like me, they were, like, ostracized or demonized right. by the community I was a part of. And so, like, to see someone else like you and to have them reflect you and to hold those vulnerable inner parts of yourself, like, that is so sacred. And I think, you know, the folks who, like, don't have that intersecting with their work don't know what that void is like, you know, like, they were held from the moment they were born, and they saw themselves every place they went, you know.
Yeah.
I have a question on that note. Can you tell us what it is like to be, I forget how you say it, you say you are a mutant, and then you said in the introduction that you are ever emergent.
Right.
Yeah. Can you talk about emergence?
Yeah, I think you know, for a long time, like, I think I grew up really believing the cis hetero capitalist norm of, you're going to get a job and you're going to have a career and it's going to be a path, and that path is going to lead to a house or whatever, right? And mm-hmm. and I think, you know, I've realized that life, you know, Goddix wants so much more for us and has plans mm-hmm. way beyond capitalism. And part of my emergence is allowing Goddix to really move me and to mm-hmm. shape me and transform me, and to know that I'm going to be transforming constantly, and that's something that feels exciting now. And mm-hmm. I think that's, yeah. And so, and also, like, not wanting to name, you know, knowing that I've inhabited many roles and almost feeling a resistance in a way of saying, like, I'm an artist, I'm a healer, I'm a, you know, and, like, I'm so many things, and I'm always shifting. And there's sometimes, you know, for example, like, the last couple of years I've been, you know, mostly making art practice, but then for almost a decade I was, like, doing therapy work and working with yeah. people in many different capacities. And and who knows, you know, what the next few years will bring. And I think part of that is, yeah, allowing that emergence to continue to move me. And yeah, and so it's like almost like, I guess, in a way, yeah, it's part of my, you know, resisting these norms or these, like, narratives that I feel like I was forced to believe in growing up.
That kind of makes me think, like, as we grow and as we emerge and as we discover ourselves and maybe even grant ourselves permission to exist, certain narratives change inside of us. Certain maybe memories of past experiences change. Maybe information becomes available to us around what has occurred in the past or even how we're feeling now. And I wonder, like, as someone who is so expansive and so emergent, can you, do you have any thoughts or suggestions for folks about how to tend to the parts of ourselves that that are so different from who they were, or that we are so different from now? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the word that comes up is compassion. Mm-hmm. Compassion for ourselves across our timelines, knowing that we are constantly transforming. And, you know, when you were asking that question, it brought up a memory from a therapy session where I, you know, in the therapy session was taken back to a younger version of myself and did some really powerful healing. And the healing was around, the memory was myself at a park, and I was sitting under a tree and I was reading, and there was these people who were part of my church who were making fun of me for reading under the tree. And so in the therapy session, I went back and I like sat with myself and, you know, really validated who I was, because I didn't feel validated at all at that moment. And also realized that I always had a part of me that was with me, and that that part is very nonlinear and can exist across time and space. And so that kind of compassionate being can really go and visit us at these times when, as you were saying, we were very different and we believed different or we felt very different. And so I think, you know, from that session, I remember coming back into consciousness and really feeling like I had entered into another dimension, like I was living another life. And there are so many moments like that in healing spaces, right? With friends, with, you know, therapists or with witches, where you're healed and you're now in another place. And, you know, if I were to see myself maybe, you know, a couple decades ago and see where I am at now, I would be shocked at like why I wasn't worried about certain things that like took up so much of my mental space at that time, you know.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, as someone who is so expansive and, you know, talking through this whole conversation about aspects of time magic, how do you like to work with time magic? And what's your favorite way to work yeah. with time magic? Because there's so many ways.
How do you subvert time?
Yeah, yeah. How do you work it with time as a medium? And
ooh, wow. there's so many ways. I guess one way that I love is that I feel like I'm constantly being surprised by the universe with how time does have a divine, cyclical, synchronous way of working. And, you know, I think part of that is, you know, working with divination is one of my favorite ways of doing time magic, is, you know, communing with transcestors and sacred ancestors is also a way of working with time magic. And with that, I feel like you're able to really move back in time. And then also many times those sacred guides give you information about the future or about other timelines. And yeah, witnessing those things come to fruition has been so powerful, and is those moments where you get like full body chills, you know, and like, I think those are just moments where I'm just like, you know, I get into a really, you know, stimulated, expanded state where I just start to, you know, almost see beyond the veils. And it's those moments where I do feel like I get sometimes some of my greatest visions, or if I'm able to capture it, I'm able to create some work from it or write it down. But those are moments of ecstasy where you're really communing with spirit and really feeling spirit. And I think that to me is really powerful. The magic of time magic is really, it allows things to sync up and link up. And so those moments of, you know, channeling can happen. And yeah, so but there's so many, I feel like, you know, there's so many ways of working with time magic. Another way, I guess, that comes up as I'm talking about it too, is thinking of sacred timing. And I'm someone who believes in divine timing and sacred timing. And so I'm constantly also, I would say, like, kind of on the lookout and expectant of those things lining up, right? And that even in my move, I feel like there were many moments in my move where things could have gone a certain way, but then the mm-hmm. sacred divine timing has brought things together. So yeah, I really am a big believer in divine timing.
That makes me think of one of my dear friends, Gabriela Sarna, who's also a Polish witch. She says that, you know, it's important for us as witches to ask of our spirits and ancestors that we work with for signs. And I think I want to kind of bring that up into this conversation around divine timing, because I think that in a lot of New Agey, like postmodern witch revival, there's this idea that you oughtn't question your relationship with spirit, or you oughtn't question spirit, or you oughtn't mm-hmm. question the ancestors. But I think that it's important that not necessarily question them like, oh, I don't believe you, but like, can you show me? Cause I'm such a simple thing, or like, I'm so caught up in my stuff. Like, can you give me a sign? Can you show me like what's going on here? Like, am I losing it? Is this real? Like, and I feel like this idea of divine timing kind of reflects that. Do you have any thoughts about like how to ask for, if that's a practice of yours, if not, no worries, but like how to ask for signs from the guiding spirits and ancestors, and maybe how to like be receptive to them when they're showing up? From like both, like, yeah. I think subtle signs are really cool. Like, I think if we can see the subtle signs, that's awesome. Like, so that we're not getting like big epic experiences as signs, you know?
Yeah, that's a huge part of my practice, is asking for signs. And I love what you were saying. I fully agree. I think in the relationships that we build with our guides are really important, and we are able and should be encouraged to ask questions or to ask for clarification, because there's some ancestors who love to communicate in really mischievous ways, or in ways that like, you know, in ways that like maybe don't make sense for you in the moment. And so I always encourage people to, you know, ask the ancestor directly, like, hey, you know, or even as you said, please. You know, before I left Tulsa, my friends and I, my queer friends and I, we would always joke about there being an oracle in Tulsa who was kind of telling us to get the hell out of there. And we would constantly tell the oracle, like, we get your signs, oracle. We don't need them to get more intense. We are making plans to leave. Like, and it's really important to communicate those things, because sometimes, you know, the guides won't know if you're receiving the messages. So asking for subtlety, asking for kindness or for clarification are things that I think are really important, you know, to do when we're working with spirits. And I would say, like, you know, in many ways, like, you know, doing any sort of energy work, you can have beautiful sessions, ceremonial sessions, where you're asking for guidance and, you know, setting some sort of container, right? Starting an opening. I've done this many times where I'm in the middle of a project or I feel really stuck with something. And I will take a moment and say, okay, I'm dedicating the next 2 hours to a walk, or to doing some divination work, or some dancing, or, you know, some sort of way where I'm communing and just really letting spirit fill me. And those are those moments where you do receive these messages and something comes through, and, you know, kind of building up a practice of translating or, you know, channeling what you've received, I think is, yeah, a big part of my work. So those are ways that I think you can directly ask for those signs or invoke them.
when you're talking and when you're talking about getting signs, it makes me think about a part of my personal practice is calling out to my future self and asking for signs. And I've come up with a language with my future self of what I call leaving me breadcrumbs. And it's like little markers that show me that I'm on the right path or that I'm getting closer, you know, that I'm, when I get the breadcrumbs, it's like I'm really on my path, you know. I don't feel like we are ever really off our path, but we can kind of veer, at least I can kind of veer sometimes. And yeah, just even like energetic markers, like I always feel like that feeling of deja vu is a very big sign for me of, okay, this is like an energetic landmark and I'm getting a sign from my future self that I'm really hitting this landmark, you know, right now. So, or milestone.
It feels like from what you're saying, like it occurs to me, like when you said we're never really off our path, like that really struck me. So I kind of want to like slow that down and come back to that. Like we're never really off our path. And it makes me wonder like, these moments of getting signs or getting breadcrumbs, or getting affirmation or confirmation from the guides and the guiding forces. It's like a reminder to be in collaboration almost. It's like, where are we in collaboration with our path? Sometimes it feels like as a chronically ill person and as somebody who has a lot of social anxiety and it's hard sometimes for me to keep up with the way that I want to be in the world. And so sometimes I feel like FOMO, right? Like I'm like, in order to preserve myself, I have to withdraw. And I sometimes go real extreme into like seclusion. And this year has taught me that a lot in through the quarantine and the pandemic. Like I could not leave my room for a week and I think I could be fine. But this idea of the ebb, like an ebb and flow in our collaboration with our life path feels really powerful, somehow just to like bring forward and mention in this conversation and like maybe even just for our listeners to say like, you don't always have to be doing something and you don't always have to like, there's nothing to prove. Like, we have nothing to prove to anyone, like at all, ever. I'm a Virgo, so I'm going to say the caveat being, you know, ourselves, maybe. We can prove something to ourselves. But even in that, like the inner dialogue that we engage in, like in regards to that proving to ourselves our own worth, like where does that inner dialogue even come from, first of all? Like what program exists inside of that inner dialogue? And even is that necessary? So I just think like, I don't know. I just wanted to kind of like slow that down and it just like it opened something in me and I just wanted to share that. I don't know if y'all have any thoughts or questions or feelings or that was just too tangential.
No, I really resonate with what you're saying. I think we're all like kind of forced to believe that growth looks only a certain way. And I know for myself, one of the things when I first decided to not have a job and move more towards being, you know, artist or to kind of work for more for myself, like I had so many moments of what I like to call capitalist panic, where I just felt like, oh my gosh, I just wasted an hour, you know, quote unquote, wasted an hour not making money, you know, or just could kind of feel the way that my system had been shaped by this system to think about money and time as interconnected. And definitely has taken me a lot of healing to get through that. But I also, going back to even on a larger scale beyond capitalism, I think there are ways that we're kind of share, you know, we're told stories either through social media or through kind of passing down of stories, where many times we only hear the success or the outcome of something. And as we know, like, in order for trees or for any plants to grow, they must be in the sacred darkness, right? They must be in the void. And that's part of the cyclical nature of time. Time isn't always going, quote unquote, forward. And going back to what Kiki said, I think that's why we're never off our path, because sometimes our path does mean that we have to go into places that are about, you know, seclusion or about going inward and not producing. I think that those are all very natural things that we're in many ways kind of made to feel ashamed of, or like they're not valuable.
Yeah. And even like the expectation of an outcome, right? The like a certain outcome, right. an expectation of an outcome marking success. And right. like, how do we deal with something that would be perceived as, quote, a failure? And how do we celebrate that? And or at least come into relationship with failure? You know, and I don't even know, like, I like the word failure. Like, I personally really revel in that. I don't know. I have maybe it's my Virgo sun, maybe it's my Libra stellium, but I just like the idea of like learning from things. And a failure to me seems to be like an ultimate learning opportunity in regards to a goal or a dream or a endeavor. And so I wonder, what would be your most sacred failure, if that's a question, if you have a relationship with that word at all?
Yeah, that's such a powerful question. I'm like taking a moment to take that question in, but as I'm allowing myself to kind of feel that question, because I feel that question kind of reverberating through me. I very much agree. It's beautiful that you bring this up, because this is actually something that has been brought up in my MFA program, because I think being in a, you know, at UC Berkeley and being in an academic setting, that's something that we as artists have brought up, is that we're afraid to fail within that space. And that actually hinders your creative process, you know? And so we've been talking with faculty about that. And, you know, I think even like the project that I'm working on right now for my show, I'm not sure if it's going to work, and I'm not sure if it's going to all come together. I'm bringing a lot of disparate elements together, and, you know, I'm allowing myself to just have that process. And I think that's been, you know, feels like a big risk, but also is something that I really resonate with, that I know that my own creative practice has emerged from so many failures, and that those failures have really guided me where I need to be. And I think, you know, one of my most sacred failures that it's coming forward right now as we're talking about this is, you know, I think about when I was a younger person and I was wanting to go to school, and I applied for an MFA program and a master's in counseling. And I was, you know, dead set on that I was going to do both of them at the same time. And I know, I don't know what part of my astrology is that. I think probably my, but anyway, I thought I was going to do both of those, and, you know, ended up thankfully getting rejected from one of them. But it was such a blessing, because that there was no way I could have been able to do two master's programs at once. And it also at that time felt like, you know, I felt like I was being diverted from being an artist, because that was like my big dream. But I think I needed that time. You know, looking back on it now, I needed that time to go to therapy and to learn how to be a therapist and learn how to work with myself and with other people. And I still had so much healing to do that I wasn't even aware of at that time. And I think that that's, to me, that failure really has allowed me to blossom into who I am now. And so, you know, sometimes it can take even a decade to see how your life being moved in another direction, you know, really has allowed something else to happen and to blossom. And so, and I think every time I've kind of decided to move in a certain direction, like, for example, you know, the last 2 years being an artist, that is a quote unquote failure because I have a license in counseling that I'm just like not using at all, that I'm still in so much debt for. And, but it's like,
I feel that.
Yeah. But I know that like, that's, you know, I'm not going to allow that paradigm to kind of shift me away from moving towards something that feels so exciting and that also feels divinely guided. And I think that, yeah, those even, I guess, like, you know, I would even imagine my mom thinking that it's a failure that I don't have a full-time job, even though I'm like really successful in other ways, but because I don't have a full-time job or a steady income, those are also seen as failures within this system, you know? Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, you're out here inspiring so many and lifting up community literally daily.
It just reminds me of, I have a friend who's like a really close friend that I've known for over a decade, and I had never met anyone in their family. And there was like a day where I was potentially going to meet someone in their family, and they asked my friend, they said, do they have a car and do they have a full-time job? That was like what they asked about me. And I didn't have either of those things at the time. And so they didn't want to meet me. And it was that feeling of like, wow, that for some people, like that's what's important, you know? Like,
there's so much to unpack in that.
Wow. Yeah. I really relate to that, just in that sense of that pressure of a traditional path from family and then not doing that and then having to confront all the time that feeling of like disappointing people, but you know, it's like
refusing, okay. Refusing assimilation.
Yeah.
Like rebuking assimilation and how like the response of those who don't even understand how that is something that is such, it's like such a powerful spell. It's like it takes a tremendous amount of character, I think,
and courage
to maintain that level of sovereignty.
And it is in those spaces where there's so much possibility. And I think that's part of, I think, the fear that comes up for certain folks is, you know, when we step into our power, it does shake up systems. It does transform relationships. And yeah, and I've witnessed, you know, for myself, like I really feel, I've never felt this way, but now I really feel like I've broken past the spell of capitalism. I'm obviously still, you know, suspect to it, and they will still break down my door and take me away if I don't pay my rent. I know that for sure, but I feel like, you know, by following my path and by, you know, kind of not listening to people being like, you need a full-time job, like I've been able to craft another reality that I can live in where I'm not thinking about time all the time or money or thinking about how I'm going to survive. Like, and that's who in many ways this system wanted me to be. Like, I think I went to a high school where the folks in my high school, especially folks who were Latinx, were not, you know, encouraged to go to college. We were kind of seen as people who were going to go work in warehouses. And so I feel like by being sovereign and moving towards that very risky place of not knowing how you're going to survive, there are ways to sometimes access other ways of living that maybe could not be possible if you had listened to the norm, you know?
Absolutely. And then like thriving in that power is such a threat.
Yeah.
You know? And I love that. I love being a suspiciously large woman. I love being a threat. You know, it's like, it's good. Yeah. It's good.
Well, because even by existing and standing in that power and that sovereignty, it even just like your energy alone asks others who are so inundated by the systems and to question the, you know, and to confront that within themselves.
It forces them. It forces their hand. Mm. Yeah. Right. Like they can no longer deny the power and authority that you have within your own identity, your own place in the world. And that they don't have power there.
Yeah, and I think that is, you know, one of the sides that is painful sometimes about doing that is that, you know, as we're going, I guess going back to what we were talking about earlier with reflection, with art practice and being reflected, is when you stand in your power, you start to reflect an energy, and some people are going to be so excited and come running towards you, and others are not going to want to be questioned, or it's going to be too scary to be questioned. Yeah. So they're going to be like, I can't see you.
Yeah,
I feel like that with my book. I'm gonna plug my book, but I stopped reading the how do you call them?
The reviews,
because there would be for every like one queer trans person who was like, "This is the book I've needed. Thank you for being who you are." There were 10 cishet white folks who were like, this book is useless and pointless and isn't even real. And I'm like, well, you know, it's not for you, but, but so there is that, but it just makes me think like the ones for whom it is for, the ones who are excited, like you're saying, like it's, that is enough. I think as an artist, as an author, as a witch, that's enough to keep going. I think.
No, yeah, and that it's okay that we have the communities that we serve, right? And that our art is meant for those communities. And if I had a dollar for every time I got like a negative comment from a cishet white person online, or, you know, for every time that I show my work to a quote unquote general audience and, you know, the queer and trans folks are like so excited and love what I'm doing. And then I get a bunch of what the hell is that about? I don't get it. This is weird. You know, like, and I'm like so honored to serve the queer, transgender, expansive communities and, you know, the webs that we traverse. Like, I'm so honored to serve those communities.
Well, I would love to move into the next part, and I was curious if you would be willing to offer a few tarot cards for the collective or any witch tips.
Yes, I would love to. I actually have my deck here. I'm going to shuffle it up. I wanted to, I think one thing that I've been thinking a lot about is just the ability to, you know, as we've been talking, to constantly mutate and transform. And I know that for some folks, that's like a really exciting idea. And for others, that feels terrifying, or, you know, people don't want to do that. So I thought I'd pull two cards around that, around kind of the phrase that I've been really working with a lot is I can mutate whenever, forever. And so these are two mutation cards that I'm going to pull. And the first one that comes forward is the reception card. So this is card number 3. I'm working with the Collective Tarot, which is a queer trans tarot deck from Portland. And in this card, there is a beautiful brown hand holding a sacred person in the palm of their hand. And the person has in their womb a divine fig. And that fig is being reflected in the sky by the moon. And you can see also that the sky is surrounded by stars. And there's some beautiful wheat fields that you can see in the distance as well. And so this card really is about allowing ourselves, working with ourselves, maybe going to therapy, practicing some yin yoga, finding ways to open up that receptive ability that we have so that we could receive the gifts that the divine universe is wanting to give us, knowing that with every mutation, we receive new abilities, new gifts, new connections. Yeah. And I think that's something that I've really been kind of feeling also in this conversation, is that we are never alone in our journey. So even if we feel lost, we can kind of ask for that connection and be lost with someone together. Mm-hmm. And the next card that comes forward is the Rainbow Vision card. Mm-hmm. So yes, praise Rainbow Vision. So yeah, Rainbow Vision is about being able to see beyond the veil, being able to receive, you know, again, with that receptive energy, the messages that come through all the colors that are found in nature, through all the spectrums mm-hmm. that we're able to sense, to connect with, the different vibrations that we feel. Rainbow Vision is about opening up our energy centers in our body to really transform. And so with this mutation, we are receiving many gifts that are going to fill each of our energy centers up with divine love, with connection. And so again, as we transform and mutate, we are opening up to receive. And as we receive, we have so much to give and to be in a beautiful interdependent connection and relationship with all that is and all that is not. Yeah. And so allow that fear to be there and give that fear some love, give that excitement some love, and give all the parts of you that are shifting, transforming, that are resistant, that are excited, give them all some compassionate love. Ask them to open up and to receive what you're giving to them.
Is the Rainbow Vision also from the Collective Tarot?
So the Rainbow Vision is from the Archetypes deck by two artists in Los Angeles, Megan Whitmarsh and Jade Gordon. And so the Rainbow Vision has a person with a red outfit holding a rainbow in their hands. And they also have a beautiful hibiscus flower in their hair.
Oh, thank you for that. That feels so good. I feel that so deeply.
Me too. I'm mm-hmm. just like taking it in, letting it wash over me.
Numerologically, I'm an Empress, and I love everything three.
Oh my gosh, I'm an Empress too.
What? Get out of here.
Empress. I know. I love that. Is my birth card.
That's sweet.
I literally have the numbers 333 tattooed on my body. So,
wow. Oh, angel like number.
You're the charmed one.
No, I adore Empress energy so much.
Well, we adore you, and we're so grateful for this time. I think we're kind of wrapping up. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little about, like, what's inspiring you these days? What's keeping you grounded? What's calling you home? Whether it be people, different projects.
Yeah, I am so inspired by our online community. I feel, you know, in these times of, you know, needing to be socially distant, it's been so magical to witness so many of my friends kind of stepping into their power and holding space for their communities. That to me has been so, so transforming and healing, and, you know, has also really allowed me to stay connected, because it is so challenging to not feel like you could, you know, participate in those rituals that we have been doing, you know, in person many times. And so that's something that's been so inspiring for me. And I'm also so inspired in seeing, you know, witches as they step into their power, really transforming systems of power, systems that maybe have been needing to be transformed or even fall apart, you know, and that's been so sacred to see. And I'm so excited to kind of witness as we're kind of crafting spaces and allowing, you know, decaying systems to fall apart, to witness what grows in those spaces. Because a lot of us are planting seeds right now and really working with the sacred cocoon, void, cave magic in this time that we're in right now. And so, you know, by the time that this comes out in March, I'm really excited to see what kind of flowers and fruits are going to be coming forward at that time.
Beautiful. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we wrap up today?
I want to share my gratitude, and I'm just so honored to, you know, be on this podcast and to be connected to your communities, and just so feel so blessed to be here now on the West Coast and to be so close to you, and definitely setting the intention to connect in person when that makes sense. Because I, you know, such a huge fan, and I'm so honored to be able to connect in this way, but also, again, planting those seeds and setting those intentions for in-person celebration and creative magic at some point in the near future.
It would be so cool to go to the Museum of Museums together and see our installations together.
I know. Oh, my God.
They get to spend more time together than we do.
Oh, my gosh. I know. Yeah, I would love to just share my gratitude as well for you, and just so grateful for everything you're doing for community and the weaving that you're doing, and just so grateful for your art. And also, I loved collaborating with you as well on the video.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I do hope we can collaborate more in the future as well. And yeah.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Well, I think I will close container if that feels good.
Feels great.
Yes.
So
yes.
I give my gratitude for this container today. It feels so expansive, and this conversation has been so inspiring. And I release all those who arrived in this container, and also give gratitude for those listening wherever you are in time and space, and just release all the spirits and the ancestors from this space, and I re-invite back those that were disinvited at this time, and just ask that you find your rightful place in the order of things, and may it serve you and serve you well. And I ask that this conversation be received and ripple out into our communities and the world in a way that is impactful and transformative and inspiring. And I just once again give my gratitude for this space and this time together, and I lift these prayers and lift this this wheel, and just say this conversation is now lifted, and so it is.
So it is.
So it is. Thank you so much. Send you both so much love, and so wonderful to connect with you tonight, and I look forward to connecting again soon.
Likewise.
Yes,
bye.
Bye. Thank you so much for joining us for this conversation today. Make sure to follow our guest and follow us on Instagram at The Living Altar for more information and upcoming rituals and conversations.
Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a comment and some positive feedback for this podcast. And tune in every new and full moon for new episodes.